Okay, I guess I really should start now because we have a rather packed agenda. And welcome. This is the Enum Working Group session of RIPE 55. And my name is Carsten Schiefner. I'm co-chair of the Enum Working Group. And the term co-chair sort of implies that there is at least another co-chair, which is my esteemed colleague, Neil O'Reilly. And some sort short administrative matters. The scribe is Alex Lehoy of the RIPE NCC. The Jabberwock is Dirk Steinbrügger, as well, NCC. The microphone etiquette is as usual. If you contribute, please state your name and affiliation if needed. Of course, the session is also, as usual, being recorded and archived. Let's run through the agenda very briefly. We just ticked off almost the administrative matters. It's the minutes from RIPE 54. We're going to have a short review of the action list. We have main presentations, short news, the discussion phase, or if needed, discussions on the presentation we heard on Tuesday on emergency call handling, interaction with any other working groups, AOB, and then the close. I just wonder, is there anything you want to see added or have as issues with the agenda? If not, the agenda. Oh, yeah?
Short question. In the unlikely event that we still have some time, Alex Meyerhofer from enum.at. In the unlikely event that we still have some time at the end of the meeting, I offered to talk about the crawler.enum.at website. So if
that would
we
be
have
fine.
A web browser and stuff like that.
Let's see what the amount of time is left over at the end of this session. So, I guess the agenda for this meeting is approved by that then. Fine, thank you. The minutes of last RIPE meeting were already approved on the mailing list. There is a little issue about a typo that will be followed up by the co-chairs. We need to possibly change the or amend the summary of action items a little bit because there was a little bit of ambiguity. There is a no action point 54.2, but two action points 54.3. So this is really minor, but just to alert you that although the minutes are already approved, we need to do some wordsmithing here, or actually amending the summary. What is done? So these action items are ready for closing. That is the action item on me to liaise with the NCC Services Working Group regarding DNS-MON. We've done so. We heard the presentation by Andrew Suri on extending the RIPE policy for DNS-MON to also Tier 1 Enum registries. There's another action item on Neil O'Reilly that is scheduling this working group in parallel with the address policy working group. There was an email sent out by Neil O'Reilly sometime in June this year. So there was no objection whatsoever. It was, as you put it, deafening silence. So we take it from there that nobody really has an issue with having the Enum working group and the AP, the address policy working group in parallel. And so the RIPE NCC is free from our side to plan ahead this way. There's an ongoing action item, or still open at least, that is the NCC correspondence archive. My proposal would be to close that action item as well. Because in the meantime, I have had talks with the NCC, and the NCC agreed to revert back the correspondence archive on Enum, what it used to be. So that includes basically any correspondence in terms of emails, faxes, letters, scanned letters, and so forth. So I would assume this action item is I'm sorry. I would assume this action item is closed like anytime soon, because the NCC is already working on getting all the necessary documentation together and to put it up on the website. The last action item that is still open is the quality task force. I think this action item can be closed as well. I would leave that up to the community here, to the working group, to eventually decide upon, because I feel that what's going on, or what was meant to go on in the quality task force, is pretty much in line with the DNS mount effort anyways. So unless anybody objects to also closing this action item, I would just have that ticked off as well, because it's being handled with the policy change proposal by André Suri to include DNS to include enum registries in the DNS mon policy as well. I take that as a yes. Okay. Which brings me to the main presentations we're gonna listen to today, which is Motivating Enum, Avoiding the Bottlenecks by Klaus Nieminen from Ficora in Finland. We have another presentation on infrastructure enum and implementation options here in the Netherlands, which originally is a thesis by Lennart Maris, who is here, and being
I thought it was a thesis subject.
Okay. Thank you so much, by Peter Noren, who is here as well. So my understanding is that this presentation will be held by you two jointly, more or less. And the last main presentation is by Ottmar Lendl. He called his presentation A Heretic's View on SIP Routing, and I'm pretty curious about this presentation, how a heretic's view will actually look like. We have short news afterwards. That is the presentation by Annie Robaszewski, the CTO of the RIPE NCC, about the plans for signing DNSSEC signing E164.upper. We have a brief update from Jim Reed on Plus 44, and another update meant to be done by Conor Daly on the Irish enum tree, but my understanding is that this is going to be held by Neil O'Reilly. And the emergency call handling, plenary follow-up if needed, we'll see about that. And the interaction with other working groups, in this instance with the NCC services working group, on extending, as I said, extending DNSMON for enum or to enum zones as well, enum 2.1 zones. Any other business? And that's it. We come to the review of the action list and the close, which brings me to Klaus.
Okay, hello everyone. My name is Klaus Nieminen and I'm coming from the Finnish regulator. First of all, I believe it's quite essential for you to have some background information about the user enum work we have done in Finland. I also want to present you the current commercial model and the system we have up and running. After that, I think it's possible to get to my actual topic, the problems of the user enum and what kind of the decisions and ideas we have to solve these issues. In the end, I have added also a short presentation about the infrastructure operator enum work. It's of course bit out of scope of my presentation, but I thought it could be interesting to many of you. Okay, well, as you can see from this slide, we have been doing a lot of work for the user in among many, many years. Well, I think we were also one of the first countries to have the delegation from the RIPE NCC. We were also one of the first countries to have the pilot up and running. Well, yeah, till that it was quite easy work. We had a operator group. Actually, this work started within the our numbering working group that founded a sub working group for the ENUM basic study. After that, we finished the study and decided, the operators decided that, okay, this is something we want to browse a bit more and do the pilot. So we made the delegation request for ITUT and the RIPE and got that done. When they started to do the pilot program, trying to make the system definition, well, yeah, it was also quite easy work because we had quite many interest parties in Finland doing that. Well, then it was a bit different what I expected. I never thought us to be the manager of the tier one, but we also hosting the .fi, and some people thought that, okay, there's a lot of commonalities and synergy in that. So we are now running also the tier one for the user enum. Well, the commercial launch came about 1 year ago, but well, what you are going to hear a bit more later, we have faced a bunch of different kind of the problems, and we hope to solving them quite soon. If you have want to have any more information about our commercial system or the service we're offering, so there's also a link for our website. Well, the current system and model is the following. We don't accept any direct delegation requests from the ENUM users, so we need to be a service provider between us and the end users. The validation is done using the validation servers that are hosted by the incumbent operators, the operators who are offering services for these numbers. We have a linkage for the number portability database, so we can actually, well, I could probably even describe shortly the process. First, the ENUM user asks this kind of the validation password from his own or her own telco, then gives that password to the ENUM service provider, who makes the ENUM registration request for us. After that, we check, of course, the validation of the request, check the number portability database, and get the operator offering services for that certain number. After that, if the validation is okay, we check that the tier 2 name servers are okay and make the delegation. Totally automated process and requires, well, really well, little effort from us. However, well, there are some things that aren't probably the best options. First of all, well, they need to have the ENUM service providers. I don't believe that the users want to have the ENUM only. They want to have a complete service. Then there are things that are tier 2 name servers need to be updated and managed by someone. And the one thing, we have the €4 registration annual fee for these domains. So what went wrong? I believe that the first issue is that what is the target group, your market for this service? Enterprises, that's one thing I could imagine to be a good candidate to be your customer. ENUM could have more value for them than the just the end users using, for example, mobile services. Also, this kind of the governmental sector, I believe that could be also a pretty good candidate to offer this kind of the free calling. I mean that Estonia has chosen to do it Skype way. Use Skype and enable people to call in free. Well, we could do that using ENUM and SIP, for example. And about the VoIP subscriptions, I mean, the VoIP providers is, of course, the natural customer base for your service. However, in Finland, we have only few providers offering VoIP services, and they have only a couple customers. So the market is quite small, unfortunately. Well, then the problem was that how much these customers would be willing to pay for the service. For example, the incumbents offering the VoIP services, yeah, they had a few candidates that wanted to offer the Enum service for whole of their customer base. But well, then you start counting €4 times your customer base. It's quite a big money, and that was totally too much, I have to admit. The operators won't do that. Well, the other issue is that can you rely on the incumbents on the validation? We had all our main incumbents doing the Enum study, the pilot work, and they're actually interested in that phase. However, when they came to the commercial launch and the commercial decisions, well, the interest vanished. So that actually meant that no validation, no service. Well, you didn't have the market in the VoIP subscription base. So also these providers, they aren't actually interested to pay the €4 per customer. So we need to actually do something. And next is what we are planning to do. First of all, we have made a decision to decrease the price to €0.50. I think that could be a suitable amount for a VoIP provider per year. That shouldn't be too much, at least in my opinion. The other thing is that we are now removing the validation power from the incumbents in the mobile side. We SMS validation seem to be quite a good candidate to actually make a strong validation and also have the payment, because we don't want to have this kind of the €0.50 prices or charges to be paid by the end users. The charging cost is much more, so that doesn't make any sense. So we are planning to have a premium rate number that can take everything into account. Well, other things, if you are offering services for end users, you need to have actually the service provider anyway. That's point one. And the thinking about if you are enabling the direct delegations, then you could probably face a problem that the end users try to maintain the tier 2 servers by themselves. Of course, it's totally free for them because we are not making any restrictions. The tier 2 can be run and managed by anyone. But still, I believe it could be a wise decision to offer also the tier 2 service for the users of the user Enum. Also, other thing that we are now planning to take user Enum to our own use and advertise that in the governmental sector, because this kind of the open access or free access to the officials, it's something that well, of course, it has some drawbacks, but I believe that it could be one way to get the information society forward. I mean, you could also offer different kind of the services in the end. Currently, of course, only the VoIP and the voice connection, but you could make the communication between the consumers and the officials a bit more rich. I don't have too much to say anymore about this, so I want to start the operator Enum part. This work was started in our national SIP interworking group last spring. And the work was finished quite soon, so we had the public consultation last autumn. After that, we made recommendations to implement operator Enum in Finland, and I actually managed to outsource the work for our number portability company that is run by our main incumbents. So the current work is done by the three biggest operators in Finland. They also had a public workshop, and they have now posted the specification for all our operators to have comments. The current status is that the NUMPAC, that is the number portability company, is now doing the commercial evaluation and the the pricing models and the different implementation options. There's now quite clear plan to go forward, but still, of course, you need to do the actual technical specification for the system before having the vendor around on that. So now a few principles that were chosen in the work. First of all, the operators actually wanted to have a bit more flexible model in making the delegations or maintaining the NAPT records. So it's this kind of the mixed tier 1, tier 2 model. I believe in the end it will be that every number will be hosted in the tier 1, because the plan was to have all the ported numbers hosted in tier 1, and the operators were given a possibility to do the other numbers in their own or host them also in the tier 1 server. It was planned to be support different enum routes, because we don't actually believe to have a single infrastructure enum route any soon. So it's one thing that needs to support different kind of the interconnection options. First of all, IPX is one pretty good candidate, because there are, for example, Telia Sonera involved in the work, and that is driving quite hardly on the IPX side. Then there are some of the issues. Of course, the number portability database is quite expensive product and system, and the operators are thinking that if they could use the operator enum to replace the number portability system currently in use in the long run. So it's planned to be a bit independent. Of course, now there are planned to be a linkage from the number portability database, so you can have the data in. But in the long run, it could be the only system up and running. Also, the main idea is to have this kind of the separate front end where you can make your own changes, so it can't be totally dependent on the existing legacy system. There are of course some issues still. First of the commercial side, who is paying and what. After that, I believe there are a few technical questions the operators were having. One was the TTL value for the NAPT records. I don't personally believe it's a problem, but still, if somebody have comments on that, I would probably be really delighted to have comments. A few other things. At the time schedule, I can't promise anything, but I hope that they get the specifications and the commercial issues solved during this autumn, next spring. So we could have this up and running next year or early 2009. Hard to say. Well, thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Klaus. Are there any questions about this presentation? I consider this as a no, everything was clear, perfect. Thank you very much. Which brings us to the next presentation, jointly held by Leonard Mares and Peter Noren. If you would come to.
Okay, welcome to this presentation about infrastructure enum and implementation models for that. My name is Leonard Mares, and I will present this presentation to you together with Peter Noore, my supervisor with my master thesis. As Karsten already said, I finished my master thesis this January, so it's almost 10 months ago. And today the first part of the presentation will be done by me. I will present the results of my research, and then Peter will come in and he will do a revision of my conclusions after a year. So that will be interesting. Okay, now let us start. The uprising interest for infrastructure enum has to do with the upcoming technology, voice over IP. Currently, we are in this stadium in the Netherlands. So there are different VoIP islands, and that are these things here, and they are interconnected through the PSTN. So if you want to call another VoIP user from this island to the other island, then it flows through the PSTN. But yeah, it's a matter of time that technology has changed to voice over IP. And that's where infrastructure enum comes in. But first, before that, I will tell you more about how our operators cooperating now at the current situation. In Holland, we have a platform. It's named COIN. And that's a platform where operators interchange information about ported numbers. So if a customer wants to change his number, then he can take his number with him and go to another service operator. And the operators are working on this, are cooperating on this network with a central reference database. And in that central reference database at the moment, all ported numbers are there, and they are mapped on a telco code so that you know which number belongs to which operator. Now, the organizational model is COIN is an association, so a non-for-profit organization, and all the members are telecom operators. And the obligation of number portability was the thing why they were cooperating. That was the driver. Now, how will VoIP interconnect be in the future? That was the central question when I started in March 2006. There was infrastructure enum, there were a lot of people who were thought about the technology, but how could you apply infrastructure enum? How will companies use it? That was my starting point. So enum is also a mapping. It's a mapping of a phone number to a telco ID or a gateway. And operators put in their information and get information from that database. But a lot of questions exist. So who runs the enum database? Is that a group of operators or is it a special company? And what will be the scope of the database? Will it be an international scope or more a national focus? And that made that I, with that questions, I did a research and I interviewed several operators, stakeholders, and I made a few models, three models. And I will start with this model. This is the closed model. So as it all federation model is the name. And here are the numbers, because telephone numbers are really important and they are in a private tree. So all the operators, only two here, but that can be more. But they are query these database, and that can only be done by the operators who are associated together. And the actual calls are going through a closed IP network. So enum in a private tree, and the calls are flowing through closed IP networks. Now the opposite of in which you can apply infrastructure enum is an open model, the email model. And I called it the email model because much similarities are there with the email system. And now you put the infrastructure enum database in the public internet, as in the RFCs is there's not an real RFC, but the proposing and the initial view of infrastructure enum was to put it in the public tree, and then operators are querying the tree and are also delivering the call through the public internet. So this is a total different approach. And then model three is a combination of those two models. So still you put the infrastructure enum database in the public internet, but operators they can distinguish themselves whether they deliver the call through the public internet or use of if or using a closed IP network. Okay, as I already told, I did a survey in the Netherlands, so with Dutch stakeholders, and those stakeholders are mentioned here, and that are the incumbents like KPN, or it was Intranelnet, a new VoIP provider. And first I had open interviews with them, and so I established the three models I proposed here. And then through an internet questionnaire, I asked all the stakeholders to give their comments again. And the main conclusions from the research were that phone numbers, the operators still think that phone numbers will remain important for many years. And that's because it's a standard. Many people are used to using it, so the phone numbers will be important. And that implies that most of the people see infrastructure enum as an important ingredient for VoIP interconnection. And there are no serious alternatives mentioned by them. And I asked the different stakeholders what their view was on the different implementation models. And there is no overall winner. Some different stakeholders prefer different models. And this is the summary of that. The closed model is not surprisingly supported by service providers with an own network. The open model is more supported by vendors, service providers without an own network, and also facilitating parties like M6. And with the compromise model, there was no strong view. Now, based on this things I had seen in the market and what on my research, I made my view of the evolution of infrastructure enum. How will it develop in the future? Now, what we see today is that there are different initiatives rising, and they are organizing infrastructure enum in a closed way. So and they will coexist next to each other. But after a while, maybe two of those initiatives will merge to a bigger closed model, bigger federation, wherein several operators are cooperating. And I think after a while, also the open model will come up and will coexist next to the closed model. And then on the long run, I expected that those models will come together, because I thought infrastructure enum will come up bottom up. So first closed models, open model, and then there will be many companies asking for more bundling of forces, and there will be one global infrastructure enum database. That was my view in my report. Okay, I will do Peter the revision.
Well, thank you, Lennart. As Lennart already explained, I was Lennart's thesis advisor. So he finished his thesis in January, and after that he went on some very well-deserved traveling around the world. In the meantime, infrastructure enum went on. So the industry spent quite a lot of effort developing the concept. So I thought it would be interesting to have a look at Lennart's conclusions 1 year later and see whether they were true or not. And I'm happy to say that most of them are very true. So we expected that infrastructure enum would be, well, the only candidate for routing in voice over IP interconnect. And until now, no alternatives have surfaced. So we're always open to suggestions for other answers to this question, but so far we haven't seen any. So that's okay. And as Leonard showed you in his previous slide, we predicted that the initial implementations would be closed, so they would start bottom up. And by then, we had the example of the Dutch cable operators, but now we see more of those examples. Like the GSM Association has announced plans to create their own infrastructure enum for all mobile operators in the world, so that would be quite large. The US cable companies have done something similar to the Dutch cable operators, and there are more smaller examples. And then the next step would be that those closed implementations drive a scaling up of infrastructure enum by merging or by interconnecting. So you get a larger closed implementation. And we see some movement there. There's the SPIDER registry, that's an initiative by NetNumber, which starts coupling different infrastructure enum, closed infrastructure enum variants. At the same time, there's a growing emphasis on the role of the national numbering, the database for number portability. Those are typically national databases. And the idea behind that is that you don't need to merge two implementations if they use the same data to start with. So if there's one source of authoritative data, and then if two implementations use that same data, there's no need to interconnect them because they would have the same data anyway. So I've illustrated that in this picture. So two countries with two number portability databases, and they can send that data to multiple infrastructure enum trees or registries, and the registries can add their own data if they want to. But this emphasizes the authoritative data in these national number portability databases. And what you see there is that this is convenient for telcos, because they already need to provision the national number portability database. And then if you use that database to provision the enum trees, then there's no additional provisioning, which makes the entrance barrier lower for them. Then the other thing that would happen that we predicted is that infrastructure enum would open up, so it would move from closed to a mixed model to an open model. And well, we don't see that happening at the moment. And if you look at the operators who are driving enum now, there's not a single one who has indicated that he wants to put routing data in the public internet. So there's netheads versus bellheads, of course. You should, well, at this point they already have quite a lot of DNS databases within their networks, so they're in their own domain. For them it's already a bit of a step to put it in a federation. So they first start within a federation of their friends, of course, but not in a federation with any competitor all over the world. So for the time being, we don't see any opening up. Okay, so those were the conclusions. I think Leonard made a very good short-term prediction. The long-term is always more difficult, but who knows? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Leonard and Peter. Are there any questions from the floor regarding the presentation and or the findings? If not, I would have one. Do you have any plan to extend your research into other countries, in particular those countries without a centralized number portability database, such as Germany, for example?
No, we don't have plans in that direction, I think. What we do see is a move in countries where there is no central database to a system with a central database. I think that's true in the UK, mm-hmm. where they have a similar situation. And I think they're working on a new generation of database that is enum-based and central. So maybe that problem will solve itself in the future as more countries move to centralized databases. But okay.
So in that sense, OBE overtaken by events, just as simple as that.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, thank you again, Leonard and Peter, and which brings me to the next presentation. and that is Otmar Lendl becoming heretic this time. So I just wonder what his heretic view on subrouting will be like. And by the way, I will just start to distribute the attendee lists sheets, and yeah, just pass it around and write on your name and company.
So hello everybody. My motivation for this talk is Tallinn. We had a nice, very interesting talk from Geoff Houston called the contrarian view to Enum. And while there were some very interesting and good observations in there, I think he missed a few points. So I was tempted to do a contrarian view on a contrarian view. But instead I said, okay, let's call it a heretics view. Just a different approach to Enum, and have a bit step back and have a broader look at what can happen in terms of zip routing in the long term, what needs to be done, what role can Enum fulfill if we step back and redesign how we route zip calls in the internet. So quick overview. So I'm going to very, very shortly try to summarize Geoff's talk, which is tricky because I wish I could do condense your talk into 2 minutes. Okay, I then take a step back, look at the problem space, and then give some of my thoughts on what we have to do to get a consistent routing architecture for the long term. So that's my quick summary. Please correct me if I'm wrong. First of all, user Enum, well, nice idea, little traction. I've been trying to sell user Enum in Austria for the last 3 years, and yes, it isn't easy. Lots of different factors. Primary one is we didn't get above the initial adoption hump, so that stuff gets run by itself. So that Metcalfe's law takes up, and we are not there yet. In terms of infrastructure Enum, the point was that carriers want to find, under their own control, interconnection points to each other. Full control, who to talk to, full security within their own club. That's what they want. And Geoff has two slides. One is, well, the telcos could do it, and going to be mind-bogglingly complex, this nice blue ball machine on the slide. And I tried to find white papers about what the IPX is trying to do. And all I get is like, oh, we're making the GRX application aware and make it to the IPX, and somehow the network will provide all these interoperability features, cascading settlement and whatever. So they're doing something, and I have no idea how this is going to work, and I couldn't find any public information on how this thing is going to work. Versus the ITF. I've been there, the last one, and if you look at what's happening in Spearmint and Enum, it's especially Spearmint, it's like use cases, terminology, requirements, architecture, and well, I fully concur with Geoff, that's gonna take ages, and I'm right now not sure that everybody there has the same view on what the result should be or actually what the problem is. Regarding the infrastructure Enum, combined user Enum stuff, which Geoff talked about, this deflag in the NAPTA processing, I hope so that we've managed to finally shut that down for good. This proposal has no way of being practical, and there should have been out and updated the draft which kicked it out, and there wasn't any update, so it's still in there, but it's wildly assumed to be dead. So thank God for that. Priority entries are a big deal, and I think that's the point where you said, okay, that's the main use for enum, for private interconnection trees, for federations to have to publish into that tree the interconnection points of each other so that carriers can find within the private space how to reach a peer. I'll follow up on that in my slides later. What is missing here is that what I've seen a lot is that enum is used within a carrier as sort of provisioning system, as a runtime system, how to query, how to get the actual active elements in the network, the switches, the routers, to query its own database. Instead of an IN lookup, they're going to use their own very, very internal enum tree as a provisioning protocol. That's actually really in use out there, using enum just internally instead of another type of database lookup, LLAP, or whatever other stuff could be used. About Spearmint, yes, interesting. What I see from Spearmint right now, it isn't so much about layer 2 and 3 priority of service thing. Right now, Spearmint is fully in the SIP layer and stuck there for good. So, what do we want to talk about today? Let's assume for a moment that PSTN goes away. Well, we're in Amsterdam, drugs are on every other street, we can dream, and once we assume that PSTN is gonna away, it's where the hell is my default route? Right now, anything which I can't terminate via voice over IP, okay, dump it to the PSTN. That's the current mode of all VoIP routing we have. If I don't learn a better route via enum or via some other VoIP routing protocol, dump that call to the PSTN. But once the PSTN is gone, that ain't gonna work anymore. It's like flashback 20 years back when the ARPANET was still the only backbone of the internet, you could just dump your traffic to the ARPANET and they will figure out what to do with that packet. And if the PSTN goes away, we need a fully fledged routing system without the PSTN. So the routing within the PSTN, the SS7 system, is an interesting beast based on a lot of manual intervention, manual tables, manual updates about tariffs, about settlement fees, got fed into the switches, and it's a mess. Trying to get a new numbering range routed in the PSTN takes ages. Liechtenstein, I think it took 3 years to get the country code fully routed in the PSTN. Austria's voice IP numbering range, plus 43, 780, still isn't reachable from all carriers in the world. So the get the call routing up to speed into the internet style world is a very worthwhile project. So what do we need to do that? As mentioned in the last presentation, numbers are here to stay. There are dreams abound about replacing them by SIP URIs or whatever, or Skype usernames. It ain't gonna happen. What I see is Metcalfe's law for more than a billion endpoints is so mind-bogglingly huge. Value proposition of numbers is so huge, there's no way a new system can come up and replace that without being compatible. I don't think so. There might be that some closed user groups may move to something else, but on a worldwide global scale, as a lingua franca of communications, telephone numbers are here to stay. Inter-carrier compensation. I see two stable states. One thing is sender keeps all, more or less the internet style of billing, that every side pays their own bills and peers and whatever, and there's no charging for an individual call, versus mutual settlement, that whenever a pass the call to somebody else, he gets paid. I think both systems are stable states. both are valid, both are worthwhile. I wouldn't judge which one is better, but both are stable states. And flipping is difficult. And right now, at least in Europe, we are very firmly in the mutual settlement world. There's a huge money in that business. And whenever we go to a carrier in Austria and try to sell them user enum, the obvious question is, well, where's my termination revenue? Where's my money? Second part is, there's a lot of money in the premium services. So whenever we go for Send That Keeps all this business about call-in quiz shows, ringtones, and whatever drops off as well. So can this flip? One thing is, well, perhaps few carriers can start to private mutual settlement free peerings. Yeah, good idea. Can happen for small operators, can't happen with big operators. There are two arguments against that. First of all, arbitrage. If I have a cheap way to give calls to Telekom Austria, don't have to pay settlement to them, I'm very tempted to tell everybody else, hey, give me your calls to Telekom Austria for just a half the price you have to pay for direct, and I give them for free and keep half the money. I mean, if you look at the history, what absurd call routing has been done in the PSTN, like inter-USA calls going via Canada. We had examples of Austrian calls within Austria being routed via France because some France Telecom made a mistake in the tariffs to an Austrian mobile operator. So these guys know arbitrage, and if they open up one ingress point to the network without termination fees, they know everybody else is going to try to drive their traffic to that hole as well. Furthermore, incumbents are usually required by law or by regulation to treat everybody the same. So if I, as a Telekom Austria, would allow for settlement peering with one small operator, and everybody else can come to me and say, hey, I want the same deal. So they're very reluctant to open up that Pandora's box for them. Can this change? I see two ways. One is that end users and corporations make a big run around the carriers. If corporations start direct peering amongst each others, then there's a big pressure on the carriers also go for settlement free, for flat rate peering, and that's gonna drive this down. Other ways that the relation environment changes. Right now in Europe, termination rates are usually at least bounded by government intervention. Most important stuff, at least in Austria, is the termination fees for mobile operators. In my opinion, it might change, it isn't there, and I wouldn't hold my breath waiting for the industry in the PSTN world to go from settlement base to send that keeps all. Full mesh. If we have to assume settlement between carriers, that means whenever two parties talk to each other, exchange traffic, exchange calls, they exchange money. Exchanging money means some kind of contract, some kind of paperwork, means manually configuration. And even if you don't exchange money, our experience with carriers is, hey, they want a written agreement anyway. We tried to give away software to the Austrian incumbent, and as they said, hey, no, we don't want that. We can pay for that, and you have to give support or whatever, but just something for free, give away, we don't do that. So I don't think we will ever get a full mesh of integration points between all carriers in this world on the voice side. Even though in theory, via the open internet, everybody can talk to each other on a layer 3 level, I don't think they will do it on the voice OP layer. Peering hubs, federations can help, but not everybody will join same federations, or there will be always a federation which any two carriers will be a member of the same one. And is the email model really a thing which the carriers can allow to use? I'm not sure. What does the current standards do? RFC 3263 locating SIP server says, okay, if you have a SIP address, go to the DNS, NAT lookup, SAB lookup, A, quad A lookup, then contact that SIP server there, just like email. The model is the same as an email. Whoever asks gets the same ingress point to your network. It's a mapping, it's not routing. Everybody gets the same contact point. And as a carrier, have to announce one set of ingress points to anybody else. In my opinion, that's not what we need, or that's what the IETF is still pushing. So how do I read the IETF right now? If you go to them and say, we need to interconnect voice service providers. I say, okay, run open SIP services, use our RFCs, and you're done. But well, if you run open SIP servers, we have problems with potentially spit, denial of service attacks, tough stuff. So the IETF said, okay, we have to fix that. We have to fix the problem with open SIP proxies, SIP identity, TLS, whatever. I think that's wrong. We need to focus here. We need to find a way to interconnect SIP operators without opening up all servers. The email model, in my opinion, will never gonna work for the current crop of voice operators. So if we don't have full interconnection, we need transit. Because we want to be able to call any number or any user. If my carrier doesn't have a direct peering with the carrier at the other side, I'm gonna need some transit. Oops. Bad word. This makes a lot of people in the IETF very nervous. The end-to-end principle is wholly there, and yeah. But if we don't get and everybody talking to everybody else, we need transit. No way around that. We have a network then. Gonna find a path within that network. Paging Professor Tannenbaum, he's somewhere in the city here. We need a routing protocol. Can private enum help? Imagine carrier 1 and carrier 2 sharing some federation and private enum tree there. Same thing within carrier 2 and carrier 3. Can this be used somehow to route between carrier 1 and carrier 3? I think no. Enum is a lookup protocol. Carrier 2 can look up, hey, is this number in the shared tree to carrier 3? But it cannot import that one into the shared tree between 1 and 2. So carrier 1, by looking at the number from within carrier 3 in the private tree between 1 and 2, it doesn't go there. Here isn't the number from carrier 3. Another point is, parallel queries ain't gonna work. I can't go for parallel querying. Not good. DNS views, yeah, it could work about fudging around who sees what in DNS. Not a good idea, anyway. Route and what? If you need a routing protocol, we need some kind of routing identifier. Numbers? No. Too fucking many of them. Billions. Aggregation properties getting worse every day by a feature of number portability. Has been tried, has failed. Domain names, same thing. Too many, no aggregation possibilities. We need something else. I think we something like Geoff talked about Tuesday is that we probably need to add a new layer of identifier somewhere in there. How to route? This is more a transport layer. We need something for the SIP layer to route on. So we need a protocol to map numbers to that routing identifier, or from a SIP address to this routing identifier, or perhaps map from number to SIP URI and then from SIP URI to the routing identifier, and then some kind of protocol which finds the next hop. And that's the point where I see infrastructure enum as really important, as a mapping protocol from numbers to something I can route on. I don't want to put in infrastructure enum the pure ingress points. I want to put something in there which I can route on. That could be SS7 point codes, whatever, carrier identifiers. Doesn't need to be SIP URIs. It shouldn't be country specific. Every carrier should be able to read it. As the entrance barrier is very low for SIP operators, the number of potential readers for that tree is very large. All operators in all countries need access. Entrance barrier is very low, so why not make it open anyway? So, my opinion, IGF needs to accept that, yeah, we have to jump through our shadows and say, okay, you need to go from some routing. And the carriers, in my opinion, need to accept that fiddling around with local, national solutions is increasingly obsolete and doesn't really help in the long term. So, that's it. Lookup, routing, location. That's my opinion, where we have to go in the long term. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, we have it on the screen already. Questions, comments, remarks, whatever. I see Geoff Houston walking to the microphone, so let's see what the dialogue will be like.
Geoff Houston, APNIC, you certainly succeeded. This is heresy. But it's worse than heresy. It kind of, I worry about the amount of drugs available in this city. I honestly do. Because what I hear here you saying is a leap of logic that I just can't follow. You seem to have, firstly, a denial about the PSTN. Because the phone system works off bilats across the globe. There is no transit. The phone system can't handle three-party interactions. Every single cable, every single connection, every single phone call is a bilat. Because you don't know how to divide the money between three parties, let alone 50. But the physical world is not quite like that. If I haven't got enough capacity to Patrick, and you do, then we all start to meet and I do a brokerage deal that I route some of my calls via you to Patrick on certain days of the week and I accept some in other ways. We have a fantastic industry around bilats. And then you sort of say, well, okay, we can't do bilats. Well, hell, that was the last 30 years, and it's probably going to be the next 30. And then you say, because we can't do bilats, somehow we have to, flip back a few slides, do this policy routing thing. The key word is overlay. Now, Patrick as a VoIP provider and me as a VoIP provider can happily do the deal with even paid settlement across IP, even though we have no IP interconnect. Because the IP world just pushes the packets, and whatever my deal is with Jim or anyone else is just fine, right? I can still do the VoIP deal and settlement, and I can still do the push in and out of the PSTN. So you seem to have sort of leapt from, oh my God, bilats are impossible for the world. All of a sudden I need policy routing. But I need really strange policy routing. It's not just per policy, and it's not just per application, it's per invocation of each application. And you're just in a world of hurt. And I'd really love to help you here, but at this particular point, my brain's exploded and I need some of these drugs that seem to be so evidently available in this city.
In terms of bilaterals, in the as I see the PSDN, there's a lot of transit going on. When a small provider in Austria has a call to provider in, let's say, Congo, probably passes off the call to Telekom Austria. Telekom Austria passes the call to perhaps Belgacom, and Belgacom then passes the call off to whatever outside. Somehow, this routing information has to filter back that everyone kind of announces, yeah, you can reach that destination via me.
No. Inside your international switches in your telephone network are a bunch of entries for almost every other single operator. We don't do transits. We can't. As a telephone industry, we have no idea how to split the money. Honestly, what's in there is every other operator. It's weird, but it works.
I don't think so.
Next.
Okay, next.
Thanks, Jim Reed.
Who are you?
Jim Reed. Somebody or other that's sometimes dabbled in this space. I tend to agree with what Jeff's just said, Otmar. I think some of your ideas here appear a bit wacky. But I think the real problem I've got is that the way that we're trying to solve some of these problems or attempting to solve them such as spearmint is, in my opinion, the wrong kind of direction. Because really what we've got to try to do is find something that's more culturally compatible with the way in which telcos and carriers do business amongst themselves. As Jeff said, it's by bilateral agreements. So it may well be that, for example, we're talking about provisioning of telephone numbers for infrastructure, a bilateral agreement where the telcos decide how they share the revenue, there's a reflection of that in the DNS for some chunk of the namespace, this is what we see of your network or your numbers, and vice versa. That might be a more culturally compatible way forward as opposed to the spearmint route that's being proposed and suggested. I also don't like the idea personally that what we've got at the moment now is this idea of peering federations or balkanized trees, because that's just, it's just madness. And the sooner we can put a stop to that, the better, because we're just creating more and more fragmentation, we're creating more and more problems, because you're ending up with ever more diverse numbers of namespaces that have got limited information. We've really got to get back to the idea somehow of a single tree, a single namespace, although how that's realised may be different for different telcos because it reflects the bilateral agreements. That's, I think, the problem that we really should be trying to challenge, or the ITF should be trying to fix.
I have a different notion. You said, okay, bilaterals, two people, two carriers will put their respective number in a shared tree. And, okay. What happens if two operators don't share a tree? How are calls going to get past then?
The same way as they do just now with steam phones. For the benefit of those people who understand it, steam phones are those phones that use things like keypads and rotary dials. They don't have internet addresses.
You're
steam powered.
As we are a little bit behind time, I would like to ask two more people here at the microphones to be really brief.
Okay.
Thank you.
So you are Patrick Feldstrom, one of the original editors of the Enum thing, which seems to be very, very broken. Anyways, let's take this really quickly. You compare with email, and I think that is kind of interesting because I agree with that, because that's sort of how I designed this from the beginning. You also come to the conclusion that a lot of the work that is done to protect against spam and keep the interconnect is done on the receiver side, but it has to be done on the sender side instead. I agree with that as well. But what I don't agree with exactly the same reason that Jeff just mentioned, is that you then draw the conclusion that the end-to-end model is dead. We have had the discussion in the IETF, this is the right meeting, not the IETF, but we have had in the applications area several meetings sort of before telephony and voice over IP was started to discuss whether we are going to move over from the email we have today to only what we call consent-based messaging. And everyone said that, well, that is probably a very nice idea, but the ability to be able to send an email or make a phone call to a party without prior consent is a very, very big difference between the email we have today and, for example, chat services. And that is that force is strong enough to keep the end-to-end or email model. And I think that will be true also for voice over IP. So I think the Spearmint and voice people can probably learn more by looking at the work that is done by email. So as up until then, I agree with your presentation. I think it's pretty good. But then I don't know where you found the drugs. But anyways, maybe I want some myself.
Okay, last comment.
I just love Emirates Telecommunication. Maybe I missed something, but one question is coming up in my mind. You know, why you still need Enum if PSTN is gone? I mean, can you simply elaborate?
Because we still have numbers. Even if the PSTN is dead, we still be going to be using telephone numbers.
I see Enum as a temporary thing, you know.
No.
You don't see it this way.
No.
You see it open. You don't have any exit strategy for Enum. You think it's going to stay forever.
My opinion is that telephone numbers are the least common denominator of identifying a voice endpoint. And it works in all cultures. It's in so many brains, on paper, on...
No, I have just one point. You know, if you look at the internet, we moved from IP addresses to names. Why we did this migration, right? It's easier for people to understand names. So I see a similar trend in the future.
Are you sure you can understand a Chinese name better than a number?
I'm not talking about Chinese names, but it's another.
If you want to call a Chinese person, can you? Are you able to enter his name in Chinese characters into your mobile phone?
I can enter his English URI today, right? If I want to send him email. This was the first step for domain names. The second step is IDNs. I agree with you. So the similar thing might be here. Might be numbers, English names, IDN names, or multinational names. I was just wondering, you know, where is it heading?
My opinion is that the amount of deployed telephone numbers is so huge that it's going to be really, really hard to get away from them.
I still see it as a temporary thing.
Okay. We'll talk again to each other in 10 years or 20 years.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Ottmar, for the presentation. Thank you, everybody, for having this discussion in the aftermath. That brings us to the next block, which is called Short News, number F. May I ask?
Short.
Yes. I've just been alerted by Neil O'Reilly that this really needs to be short now because we're quite behind time right now. So first item is plan for signing E164.rapper, and I'd like to ask Andrei Hrubashevsky from the RIPE NCC, the CTO of the RIPE NCC, to give a very short update on what the plans are for E164.rapper when it comes to DNSSEC. Thank you. Andrei?
Okay, well, thank you. I'll skip the introduction. Thank you, Cosme, you did this yourself. Very quickly, that's a bit of history. As you know, we are running E164 since 2002. We also have DNSSEC deployed in our reverse tree. So the next logical step would be or was to include just another zone that we run, and this is enum tier 0 zone E164.arpa. So we informed about this intention, the AIB, and we had some consultation with the AIB, and we got support from the AIB. And you can look at the details of this correspondence on the AIB website. So what's the plan? Well, the plan is just another zone from our perspective, and same operational key maintenance procedures. We plan to start signing the zone on the 26th of November. Publish the keys key and key rollover twice a year, just the same way we do for our reverse tree, and accept secure delegations on the 25th of March 2008. And the provisioning system already supports that. The only comment we received from the AIB that they would like us to consider do a periodic security review, which we do anyway, and consider moving to hardware secure modules in the coming 2 years. And that certainly is in our plans as well. In the announcement that was sent on the 27th of September to Enum and DNS working groups, We actually mentioned 24th of March, but because this is a public holiday, he is in the Netherlands, that would be not really feasible. So I think not a huge problem that we move this one day later. And that's about it. Neil, am I right?
Perfect, thank you. Any questions? Brief ones? No? No? Then I'd like to call the next speaker, which is Jim Reed. Thank you, Andre, for the, yeah, and which is the next speaker, which comes, which brings us to the next point in short news, which is Jim Reed with a short update on Enum developments in Plus 44, which is the UK name, numbering space. And you also have like 2 minutes.
Okay, thank you, Carsten. We're very nearly there getting our contract sorted out with our registry operator. We obviously thought this would have taken a little bit less time than it actually has turned out to be the case, but we hope to actually have the documents signed this week. And a little bit of a screw up with one of the couriers, so the paperwork hasn't physically arrived here in the Krasnopolsky because three of the UK Enum consortium directors are here and we could make a scratch on a piece of paper at the same time. But that's the document, the paper's on, is on its way and it should be here tomorrow. So that's how imminent we're talking about. We're talking about signing the contract very soon. The reason for the delays have been nothing to do with actual contractual negotiations, and even with the lawyers, there's not been any too much of a problem there. The difficulty has been actually that there's some documents which are fundamental related to the contract. And these are things like codes of conduct and accreditation criteria and so on. And the work on those documents went into deep freeze because the people inside the UK Enum group who were responsible for producing those documents were also actively involved on both sides of the RFP process, or either by responding to the RFP or for creating the RFP in the first place. So that meant that UK kind of went into hibernation for a little while, and it's taken a little bit of time to get that thing back up to speed again. And the result of that was, because those code of conducts weren't there, our chosen registry provider wasn't able to commit to a start date because a start date was conditional having all these documents ready as part of the overall launch plan. What's UKEG? The question was, what's UKEG? UKEG was the UK Enum Group, or is the UK Enum Group an ad hoc industry body that predates the formation of UKEC, the UK Enum Consortium Limited, which is the company which is now charged with the oversight of the UK Enum system. Okay. And the big surprise, which shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, and the winner is Nominet. Probably the dirtiest, biggest secret, the worst held secret in the whole world. So we expect to get a detailed rollout plan from Nominet by the end of November, and the tentative launch plan is for commercial operations to start in May next year, probably around about the time of the next Wright meeting. So perhaps we can do something about that and have some kind of joint celebration or something. The UK Enum Consortium had an EGM penciled in for December the 13th, when the founding directors would stand down and be replaced by a management board elected of the membership of the organisation, and presumably the membership would be the telcos and the VoIP providers and anybody else that is interested in Enum in the UK. However, we've still to finalise this roadmap. The people involved have pretty much run out of bandwidth, don't have the time to actually attend to this. So I think that December the 13th date is probably a little bit too ambitious, and we might be looking at sometime early in January for that annual general meeting. So we still have to finalise this roadmap, getting this transition to a fully-fledged membership-based organisation, raising some awareness and outreach, doing some kind of launch event, tidy up some of the nuts and bolts of some of the, if you like, the company's internal procedures, producing bylaws for the membership so that the membership knows what they're buying into. And that'll probably take another few weeks or so. But I certainly think if we can't meet this December the 13th date, it's probably going to happen sometime in early January 2008, and just watch out for announcements. And at that, I'm done. Time for questions.
I can't see any, so thank you very much, Jim, okay, for the brief update on Plus 44. And Neil, would you mind bringing me the 2 minutes?
I think we know it's 2 minutes.
So the third and last update here in the short news is Neil O'Reilly on behalf of Conor Daly, who for some reason cannot be here today. And yeah, so Neil.
Yes, Connor had to travel, cancel his travel plans, and I'm stepping in because the other alternative was to have yet another Austrian explain this to you. It's well known that the Enum in Ireland is a joint venture between the Austrian domain registry and the Irish one. We launched a commercial service on the 31st of May. We had a launch ceremony with the chair of our regulator board. And since then, the services available are a tier one registry system, a tier two registrar of last resort. That's to say that end number holders can approach a registry of last resort, even if they can't find, a registrar of last resort, even if they can't find a commercial registrar yet. And that service is provided by IENUM. And the validation architecture is the well-known and well-documented validation architecture. The tier two of last resort and the validation services are operated by IENUM. I don't know the details of the pricing. I'm sure if Connor were here, he'd be able to tell you what that translates to in cents per registration per picosecond or whatever units are being used. I think it's more or less on a monthly basis, and I'm not sure what the numbers are. To one side of the operation, the regulator has put in place a policy advisory board, which I actually chair, and we had some hectic work between just before Christmas when the contract was signed and around about the time of the Tallinn RIPE meeting, trying to get these policy documents all signed off so that we could have the launch at the end of May. Here's the progress to date. Small number of registrations, that's so different from everywhere else. Two potential registrars are working to test the service, and there's going to be a big outreach event in the end of November. The guys are exploring infrastructure Enum, and I think it's fair to say it's just at an exploratory phase at the moment. They plan to set up a testbed service and make a working group and see where those explorations take them. And here it is, user Enum services are available on a proper production basis since the end of May. There'll be a big flag waving ceremony sometime in November with information for all the interested parties, and they're exploring infrastructure Enum. And I think on account of the time, and also because I'm not really the person who should be presenting this, we should pass on the questions. Here are some URLs that you might like to follow this up on. And I'll allow myself to be corrected by the Austrian colleagues if I'd said anything wrong. But otherwise, I think we don't have time for questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Neil. Which brings us to the agenda item G, which is the a potential discussion on the plenary presentation we had on Tuesday, which was held by Alex Meyerhofer on emergency call handling. So this time is just set aside in the, say, corresponding working group. So if anybody has a need for questions and or discussions on that very presentation, it might be, or it's the opportunity to bring that forward right now. Otherwise, we would more or less move immediately to the next agenda item. I can't see anybody jumping up to the microphone. So it was a little bit like felt by the two co-chairs that there wasn't that much of a need for discussion during the plenary already. So still, we've just set aside a little bit amount of time to have a potential discussion here. So. Agenda item X is the interaction with other working groups. At this time, it would be with the NCC Services Working Group, and also by sort of reference with the Test Traffic Working Group.
Keep talking. Okay. We find the right slide.
Okay. This is about the DNS MON service being extended into the Enum namespace as well. We had a presentation by André Sury about it in the NCC Services Working Group. So if you have any questions, comments, whatsoever, please refer to the main discussion thread in the NCC Services. This is mainly just a heads up here that this discussion will be held, as I said, in the NCC Services Working Group. I see Jim Reed moving to the microphone.
Yeah, Jim Reed. I've got one thing, Carsten, I think I really would like to emphasize that was brought up on the list recently. Everybody knows where I stand about DNS MON in general, and that, and I'm not going to go back and repeat that. I've clearly lost the argument for this, and I'll just go away and sulk in the corner. Now, on the other hand, I do think it's important that if we proceed with this for Tier 1 delegations, we need some clarity about how this is going to be monitored and have some a form of consent from the people that are getting the monitoring service or having their servers and their infrastructure monitored. For the reasons that I've tried to outline on the mailing list, I think it'd be very, very unwise if this goes ahead that you could then have the situation where a country or a state perceives this as the NCC intervening in what really is a national matter.
Okay. So you're basically suggesting that this should be sort of written down in the policy document then, in the framework, what the caveats are?
Absolutely, yes. Then if someone comes back and complains, we can show them that's what the policy says.
Mm-hmm. So
if it's not written down, that's where the problem lies.
I guess you've just invited yourself to be part of the drafting team, right?
Looks like it, doesn't it?
Just in the order of Peter was first.
No, I guess Wilfried was responding
to. Oh, okay. So Wilfried.
Do we really have the time to restart this discussion here, or do we want to move that actually to the mailing list? My point would actually be if anyone offers a service which by definition and by architecture is to be used by the general public, the mm-hmm. internet, capital I, then I don't see any good reason to worry about that service being used publicly. And whether I actually throw a query at the name server or whether I throw a query to get quality data doesn't make any difference for me, and I can see sort of any invasion into national interests mm-hmm. by doing so. Because in the DNS world, there are mechanisms to do things like split horizon. If you don't want a public service to be publicly available, don't offer it to the public.
Okay.
It's very simple, mm-hmm. but that's sort of being a DNS illiterate.
Peter Koch speaking for myself only, and I just have a stupid question. I appreciate the effort of submitting this policy proposal, but during the whole course of the discussion, I was wondering, trying to be pragmatic, which I probably shouldn't do, how many actual Tier 1 registries are we doing this for right now?
So far, three. Enum Tier 1 registries, it's three.
Enum Tier 1 registries that are not already covered by the DNS MON stuff because they are...
Then I got the question wrong, sorry.
I'm not suggesting to lock in on CCTLD registries being Tier 1s. Well, maybe I should, but isn't this a discussion in the vacuum, kind of?
I guess I just cannot answer that very question. At the end of the day, I guess it just needs to be discussed by the greater public, in some sense or the other. I cannot judge on whether this is a vacuum discussion or not, or rather, I shouldn't. Neil?
Neil O'Reilly. I'm not sure which hat I'm wearing at the moment. Mainly, I think it's one driven by my stomach. I think the best place to take this forward is on the NCC Services mailing list.
Okay. So again, an invitation to all those being interested in changing the policy and in giving input, please go to the NCC Services Working Group, in that instance, to its mailing list. And by having said that, I'd like to close that agenda item, which brings me to AOB, I guess. As much as I would like to have some words mentioned about the crawler that was offered, I guess we just have to skip that and maybe postpone it or have it.
Show of hands. See if there's enough people in that one.
Okay. Yeah. Good idea.
You might want to say it because not everybody might have heard.
Can you ask questions to the board?
The question was, can I see a short show of hands who want to listen to what Alex has to say about the Austrian Enum crawler right now, or whether we should have a that under short news during Rep 56? Which one? Okay. do you want to hear about it right now? I see one, two. Okay. It's a non-ejectable minority. So if you can do just some words. The other question is to have it under short news during Rep 56. Would that be? Okay.
the real question is lunch or Alex.
Okay.
Or Alex for lunch. Or wait for the lunch queue to clear.
Would you? Okay. My proposal would be to officially put it under short news for our Rep 56. I guess you still would have that Enum crawler up and running when Rep 56 is about to start as well. Okay, which brings me to agenda item Z, which is basically the summary of action items. From what I recall, there is one new action items on Neil and me to change the minutes, or at least the action summary part of the minutes of Rep 55 accordingly, to just get out the typos and so forth. There is no other new action item, and from what I recall, all the other action items have been closed or overtaken by events. So I guess that's the summary, and which really brings me to the end of this meeting. And so thank you, everybody, for attending, and have a good lunch and nice lunch break. Thank you.
And I'd like to make a final word of thanks to Alex, who's been keeping pace with all that's been going on as effectively as he usually does, and to the Jabber monitor, Dirk, who didn't seem to have anything to report, but thanks for standing by in case anybody should throw stuff at us. Thank you both very much. We couldn't do the meeting so well without you.
Yeah, thank you.